And welcome back to another awesome episode of Behind the Anvil. We are joined with Sean. I am going to not murder his last name because I cannot pronounce it. It's an awesome last name. I just don't know how to say it. So, Sean, welcome aboard and introduce yourself and please pronounce your last name for us.
Well, thanks for having me. My last name looks difficult, but it's really not. It's Shropshire. It's an English term. It's actually a shire in England. Name is Sean Shropshire. I'm retired Oklahoma City police officer and full-time bladesmith now. I was trying to think before we logged on here how long I've known you, and it's been at least 6 or 7 years
At
since we
least.
met. Yeah. But no,
Has
I
it been that long?
it has been that long. It seems like longer sometimes.
That's what she said. Ba-dum-tsh.
So I'm a full-time bladesmith. This is all I do now. If I'm at home, I'm out in the shop and I travel to shows and other makers' shops as much as I can. My business name is SDS Knife Works, but I've started a side hack or side business. It's called the Wandering Bladesmith. And that's where I travel to the shops of other makers. And
He
it's
hasn't
more
hit
than
our shop yet. I mean, just saying.
I actually have not been up to that part of the US in quite some time.
Well,
So
it's time to change
it's
that.
possible. It is. This all the Wandering Bladesmith all started because I wanted to go to Ireland and have a pint of beer. And I'm not even really a beer drinker, but I wanted to go sit in an Irish pub and have a pint of beer. And Deke Parker and I were driving back from Atlanta Blade Show 1 year, and we got to talking about this. And 12 hours in a car is a long time to come up with some really crazy ideas. But we decided that we were going to go to Ireland and have a pint of beer. So we found some cheap airline tickets. We flew into Dublin, Ireland on a Saturday around noon, and we flew home on Tuesday morning. In between, I have no idea how many pubs we visited, but we visited the shop of Patrick Brennan. We visited a blacksmith shop, I think three castles, a glass blowing studio, a trout farm, some museums, and we drank a lot of Guinness and Jameson.
And
And
they forgot me. I
well,
told
there's
them they could
always the
put me
next
in on
trip.
the carry-on. I mean, but no.
There's always the next trip.
Well,
So,
hopefully, I hope that is one of my goals is to get the chance to travel with the Wandering Bladesmith and check out some awesome stuff. Especially, what was it? 10 a.m. drinking champagne and making folders, as I believe I
that
read.
was actually 1 a.m.
Oh,
I was at,
1 a.m.
yeah,
Okay.
1 a.m. I was at the house of Carlo Cavadon, about 30 kilometers north of Rome. And every now and then in your life, you have these aha moments where you look around and it's like, wow. And it was about 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning. And Carlo used to play in a country and western band in Italy, and he was blaring country music on the radio. And I was working on a folder. I was drinking Prosecco out of a beer mug and eating some type of Italian cookie, and it was that aha moment that, man, this doesn't suck.
And playing, now that's kind of weird to say, playing country music in Italy by drinking champagne out of a beer mug. That's definitely an interesting story. We got to unpack that a little bit. Kind of on the show, like I was going to tell you, is this Behind the Anvil, just like that, Water Bladesmith, what we do, vice, whatever you want to talk about, favorite knife, what got you started in, et cetera. So what did get you into knife making, Sean?
When I was 5 years old, my dad was U.S. Army, and I was raised as an Army brat. When I was 5 years old, we were stationed in Augsburg, Germany. I say we because our family lived there. And we were at the Shoppette, which is the military equivalent of a 7-Eleven. And I remember on the end cap, there was a pocket knife, a knockoff brand of a Swiss Army knife with some fake mother of pearl handles. And apparently, I had bugged him enough that he just went ahead and bought it for me. And
Nice.
from then on, I was hooked. I could not get enough of knives, fixed blade, folders, cheap knives, expensive knives. And it just snowballed until I finally met a maker in Oklahoma City named George Engelbretson. And he was regionally well known, but never did advertise outside of this area, never did shows. He said he made what he wanted to when he wanted to. And he kind of took me in and taught me how to grind a knife until one day, and he was a grouchy old fart, like a lot of us are. And I was in
I
his shop
think it's
one
a
day.
qualification, ain't it?
Well, we
With a
all
little
qualify whether it's required or not.
touch of ADHD, I mean,
Oh yes. Well, and I think that's the art side of it.
true.
That's the creative side of it. But I walked into his shop one day, and he was a small guy. He wasn't bigger than a minute. I mean, just a little fella, and old and kind of bent over. And I walked in, and he told me to get the hell out of his shop. And he used some more colorful language, but I
We'll
thought he
keep
was
it
just joking around.
PG for the kids here, folks.
Right. I thought he was just joking around, and I kind of started getting stuff ready, and he turned around and he told me to get the hell out of his shop. And it kind of stopped me in my tracks, and he said, no. He said, if you're not going to get serious about this and go buy a grinder, don't come back. Get out. And literally threw me out of his shop. And so I went home, and the internet was kind of a new thing back then. It was we had it, but it wasn't like it is now.
Yes.
So I got
I think
online,
we're
and I
dating
found
ourselves there, Sean.
a little bit. That's okay. Old age is a privilege denied to many. I'll take it. But I ordered a Bader grinder, and it was a ridiculous amount of money for me at the time. But I printed off the receipt. I took it back to his shop. He looked it over. He said, all right, get your apron. Let's get to work. And just a great guy, a good mentor, an excellent maker. And he taught me to grind. And a little later on, another maker named Mike Miller here in Oklahoma was moving, and I was helping him load some things up. And he said, you see that forge over there? I said, yeah. I said, where do you want it? And he goes, in your truck. He said, because I'm not doing that. That's stupid and it's too much work.
I've heard that before.
Yeah. So I said, okay. I loaded it up in my truck. I had no idea what I was doing. It was like, how hard can this be? You make metal hot, you hit it with a hammer. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. And
Yes.
it progressed from there. Brian Tomberlin was at a show in Branson, Missouri, that Gary Mulkey started years ago. It's turned into the Central States Hammer Inn now, but it was in Branson at Shepherd of the Hills. And I was set up next to Lynn Ray when he was still a journeyman smith. And Brian came around to me and he said, hey, do you want to come down to the forging area and hang out with me and some of the guys? Well, I mean, I'm a brand new maker. I don't really know what I'm doing. It's like I get to go hang out with some ABS master smiths. Who's going to turn this down, right? It's like, hell
Right.
yeah, I'll be there.
Well, fun story about the ABS. The ABS was started by Bill Moran, who actually my dad took his first knife, his first Damascus making class from in Cheyenne,
Oh wow.
Wyoming, when I was a month old.
Wow.
How cool is that?
It's we'll come back to this in a minute, but it's
Yes.
impressive how far custom knife making has come in such a short period of time.
Yes.
But anyway, I told Brian, I said, yes, absolutely, I'll be down there. And I'm kind of getting myself together and talk to the guys around me. It's like, hey, do you mind watching my table? No, that's fine. Well, then I hear an announcement over the loudspeaker, and for those not familiar, Shepherd of the Hills is at that time was like an amusement park in Branson, very popular, lots of families. And the loudspeaker comes on. It's like, we'd like to invite everybody down to the forging area for a demonstration by Sean Shropshire out of Oklahoma City. I turn around and they're all down at the bottom of the building down there, laughing their butts off at me. I've been set up. So,
Awesome.
yeah,
Oh,
well,
and this goes on quite a bit. I mean, we do
oh
this
yeah.
to each other a lot, so.
So I go down there and I'm like, dude, I can't do that. I don't know what I'm doing. He goes, that's okay. The people watching don't know either. Like, okay. So I get up in front of everybody and I pick up a hammer and a piece of steel. I have no idea what I'm going to do. Well, Brian starts narrating for me, for the audience, telling them, I don't know what Sean would do now, but here's what I would do. And I'll be danged if it wasn't exactly what I was going to do every step of the way.
I'll bet, man, that telepathy, it's
Oh,
something
yeah.
else.
But
That's enough.
that was a great show. It was an early show. I probably shouldn't even have been there for the, with the skill level I had at the time.
Got to start somewhere.
Well, you do. And that's what I tell a bunch of new bakers is, put your stuff out there. If you're nervous to put your stuff out there, good. Then you'll do better the next time.
Exactly.
And one of the things I remember, a little side story, one of the things I remember about that show was sitting up next to Lynn Ray. And Lynn, if you ever get the chance to watch Lynn forge, the man has just incredible hammer control. And he can take a small piece of steel and stretch it literally to its limits. And where we were set up was a big covered pavilion, concrete floor, and somebody walked up to his table. Now, he was a journeyman smith at the time. He's now an ABS master smith, and I believe he's been named a living legend by the state of Arkansas. But someone walked up to his table, picked up a really large, very, very nice bowie knife that he had on the table, and proceeded to drop it on the concrete on the butt end. And fully expecting him to just explode, Lynn very calmly and quietly stood up, leaned over, and asked, can you hand that back to me? And the whole time I'm kind of watching and waiting. And he took the knife, he never looked at it. He wrapped it in a towel, he put it under the table, and he sat back down. And that was it. He never said another word about it. Well, years later, I mentioned that story to Lynn after I got to know him a little bit, and he said, yes, he said, I remember that. He said, I could have done one of two things. He said, I could have either done what I did and just put it away, or I could have screamed and yelled, and that's what everyone would have remembered, not the fact that he broke my knife. And he didn't break the blade. It just busted the handle a little bit. And he said, I took it home, and I had some work to do to repair it. He said, but the guy that dropped it called and bought that knife, and he said, he's actually one of my best customers now. And
Nice. Very nice.
it really showed me, that your public reactions to people have long-lasting effects. And I had an opposite reaction by another maker. I was at the Paris Knife Show, Paris, France. I won't name the maker, but someone I picked up, and I believe this knife was in the $15,000 range, had a lapis lazuli crown on the handle and butt. I mean, it was extremely intricate. Someone came along, and another person working at his table required everyone to put on white gloves before they handled his knife. He put them on, proceeded to drop the knife because the gloves were slick, and broke the lapis lazuli, which is, for those not familiar, is a stone. It's a semi-precious stone. The worker went absolutely berserk. I mean, yelling, screaming, it was what I expected from Lynn, but not what I saw. And it was bad enough that I got up and I left my table unattended because I didn't want to be a part of that. And the maker himself was very calm. He was very quiet. I came back. We had a little bit of a language barrier, but he said, he said, I can fix it. He said, it's going to take quite a bit of work. He said, but I'll fix it. But at that show, what everyone remembered was the screaming and yelling, not his calm demeanor and
After.
understanding that he can correct it.
Yeah.
So, as a maker, if there's any makers listening to this, kind of remember that when you're talking to the public at an exhibit or a show or anything like that.
Right on. And I've been watching that, and you've been to Paris, France several times. I believe your boy was studying over there.
Yes.
Didn't he just recently graduate?
He actually graduated a couple of years ago from his undergraduate program, and then
Okay.
this past May he graduated from his master's program. He's currently working on getting his visa to remain in France and work there.
Nice.
So yeah, the world is a much smaller place than it used to be.
Yes. I hope to eventually here in the next, decade or so start traveling abroad as well. Especially with my show ideas with the YouTube show, the American Bladesmith, I've only got an idea of. And we changed it. I changed it up from Beat the Smith because the Beat the Smith was more competition. I still want to do it, but the American Bladesmith idea, show idea was previous. I just didn't know how to implement it the way easier like I did with Beat the Smith. And I got thinking one day after doing the few episodes, and if you get a chance, go over there. You can watch me and Daisy go toe to toe. Everything went wrong with that episode of the main cameras. Luckily, Brad, shout out to our Brad, our editor and filmer guy, he had his kept his GoPro going, so we got some different angles of it. A lot of footage that we did lose, unfortunately, because the sound was just for some reason, but check that out. Self plug. But you're still the president of the Oklahoma Knife Group, is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. I took
Tell us a little bit
over as a
about that
president.
real quick.
So the Oklahoma Knife Group used to be known as the Knife Group Association. And the guys that were running it, Mike Miller and Ray Kirk, had been in charge of it for 22 years. And we had a shop tour here at my house. And I asked them to come talk to me during the lunch break. And I was scared to death because the group was gradually waning. It was getting tired. The logo had been Xerox copied so many times that it was nearly illegible. And so I as subtly as I could, asked them, what would you think about rebranding the group and seeing if we can freshen things up and get some younger makers involved. And like I said, I was terrified that I was going to offend them. And I thought they were going to jump out of their chairs with excitement that somebody else was going to help them because they
Nice.
had done it by themselves for so long with no one else stepping in to help. And we're talking about guys who are in their 70s. They've been doing this since they were in their 50s. And I've told people since then, I'm not doing this for 20 plus years. Somebody else will take this over before then. I don't have that in me. But, when you did a Google search for KGA, it came back as the Kansas Golf Association. So we renamed the group the Oklahoma Knife Group. It's pretty
Did you see a bunch of
self-explanatory.
bladesmiths out there with a hammer? Bing!
Yes, I can actually. They
Yes.
probably will now that we've said that too.
Okay, I'm in. About the only way you'll get me to play golf.
But we rebranded, and we the first year after we rebranded, we had over 60 makers at our show, up from 15 to 20 makers. The venue that we were at basically said, "Thanks for coming. We've had a great time and a great association with you. We can't do this again. This was too many people, and we're surprised the fire marshal didn't shut us down." It was ridiculous, and it was great because we had such a great turnout, but there were so many people that people couldn't really stop and look at things. So then we moved to a larger venue. And the first year we were at that venue, well, the only year we were at that venue in Norman, Oklahoma, we had over 100
That
makers.
was a fun time. I got to come
Yes.
down.
But if you remember, we had to close early because of tornadoes.
Hey, you know what? If a squirrel moment, as I call them on this, that night we had a tornado touchdown, like I think 3 to 5 miles from my hotel. Sirens going off. I open the curtains in my room. I'm sitting there in my chair, thinking maybe I should get dressed and not, in case a tornado hits and don't get sucked out the window in my birthday suit, but. Oh, hell, what the hell? If they find me hanging out of a tree, at least it'll be a cool story about it, on the news or something. Maybe I'm by, but I sat there and put my camera on live and filmed it. It was just, I love lightning shows and everything else. And that's about the closest I've ever been to a tornado in a long time. So, a
Well, if
squirrel
you're in the
moment,
mid,
right there.
no. If you're in the Midwest, that's just part of life.
Right?
And at the show, somebody came to me and said, what do we do if a tornado hits this building? And I told them it was nothing to worry about. And they said, "What do you mean it's nothing to worry about?" I said, "Look, I said you're in a metal building full of knives. If a tornado hits this building, you don't have anything to worry about. It's going to be over so fast that you won't have time to worry about it." Apparently, that's not the answer they were looking for. I've since learned to be a little more sensitive in my response to people. But
Well, I mean,
it was true,
it's
but
definitely a sharp on to the point.
everything you say should be true, but not everything that's true should be said.
True.
So
I'm learning this the hard way a lot long through my life here. This year, this is my 30th year of knife making since I started when I was 10. I grew up in it. I started making when I was 10, turning out knife here and there. Really got serious when I was 13, and just kind of fell in love with it then. So 30 years. I mean, how weird is that to say? And I'm only 40, so.
It's a life goes by in the blink of an eye. I mean, it goes by so quickly. And that's part of why I did the Wandering Bladesmith. That's part of why I love to travel. That's why I like to meet people. But on the OKG side of things, we moved from Norman to Oklahoma City this year, and we had 115 tables, sold out. It was our first international show. We had Carlo Cavadon come from Italy. In 2026, we will have 145 tables at the same location in Oklahoma
Nice.
City.
And I hope to join you this year, but we'll
Well,
see how things are going.
I would highly suggest that you book your table quickly because I believe we're a little over 85% sold out already. We only
Nice.
have about 15% of the tables left.
Well, we'll have to see. We're kind of we are filing for custody of Daisy. Daisy moved in with me, so we're gonna have to play it by ear. So
I completely
if not,
understand.
I can always drive out and spend the day and visit my family.
Absolutely. Well, and this year it's a 2-day show.
Oh,
So
nice.
we have decided that since we have international makers flying in for the show now, it's only fair to give them a 2-day show versus the 1-day show that we had since it was traditionally a regional only show. But we've got makers from all over the US, from Europe, we've got interest from Canada. I've got makers
Nice.
from Brazil that I'm talking to. So it's really becoming a much bigger show than I anticipated. This year we'll have, like I said, 145 exhibitor spaces. Next year we'll be moving into the building just right next door, about 30 yards away, and that will be the last move. That building is one large room, and if it gets any bigger than that, I'm turning this over to somebody else.
Don't blame you.
This is much more work than I ever anticipated. And if it were not for the board members I have and a few specific board members, this would not happen. This is not a one-person deal. This is not, we don't do this for profit. The only thing our board members make annually is we pay for their dinner the night before the show.
Nice.
And that's basically so we can get
And
them
that
all
was good
together
food
and
when
then,
the last time we were down there.
yes.
I definitely didn't go away hungry.
Well, if you leave here hungry, then that's your own fault.
Yes,
That's
that was some
not my fault.
good food. Oh, good food, good company. It's like one of the I brought Sam down to the first Texas Select Show down there in Texas, put on by Cowboy and Eileen. He didn't know what to expect, and afterwards, I was like, "So what do you think?" He says, "I think I just left the family reunion of family members I didn't know I had."
That's
So.
the knife community, man. I mean, if you're not just a complete prick, you're going to get along with people here. And it's a small community. If you screw somebody over, people are going to remember that. And if
Yes.
you treat people right, people are going to remember that. And when you need something, people step up. And we've seen
Well,
that time after time.
yes, we've seen that, and especially in the Fortune Fire alumni, we've had that group polices itself very well. It's very nice. And I forgot to mention, Sean is a Fortune Fire competitor. Awesome guy. And you competed, what episode was yours?
Season 5, episode 39, The Irish
39.
Ring Hilted Sword.
That's right. You were two episodes behind me. Buddy
So,
was right between us. So
yes, he was.
I'm gonna see if I can get on here and see if with the buddy it is impaired deaf, and hopefully he can understand me if we can do this. Hopefully, I'd like to get him on.
Buddy is one of my best friends. We talk, well, let me rephrase that. We text almost every day. And I've jokingly told Buddy that I wish I had more deaf friends so that they would text me and not call me. Because if God wanted us to call, he wouldn't have invented text.
So
So
you're saying I should call you more often. Got it. Noted.
you can call as much as you want, just don't expect an answer.
So those who that just might have been just hearing about the Oklahoma Knife Show, where can they go and maybe sign up or even become a member? And I'm sorry, I got to re-up my membership. Totally just dawned on me. Like, I let that lapse and I forgot to do it. So how can they become a
So
member?
the Oklahoma Knife Group, it's oklahomaknifegroup.com. All of the information is at that site about our show, about membership, about classes that we offer. And we've just recently opened up our classes to non-members. There's a little bit of an extra fee involved. If you're a member, you get a discount. Being a member does come with some benefits. I don't want this to be a total shameless plug for the Oklahoma Knife Group,
Hey, that's fine. That's what we're
but
doing here.
well, there are benefits. I think it's $20 or $25 a year membership fee. Basically, it's enough to help cover some expenses, and you get enough back out of that it makes it worthwhile to be a member. Members get first shot at the show, and the earlier you sign up and pay, the better table location you get. You get first access to members only classes, and there are some affiliates that you get discounts through, including Jantz Knife Supply. So there's some benefits to that $20 or
Shout
$25.
out to Jantz Knife Supply. Thank
They
you.
rock. They rock.
They do.
They
I order
are,
a lot of stuff from them. And it seems like wherever anywhere in the US you are 3 days away from getting your stuff, if
I'm
not
in
less.
Oklahoma, and if I order something today, well, today's Friday. If I order something on Monday, I'll have it by Tuesday. That's how
Exactly.
quick they are. And they're good people. It's a
Yes.
family-run business. They have everything you need to make a knife, to get started in this. For everyone from the beginner to the advanced, they have everything you need. And if you're not sure what you need on the website, call them. They'll
Yes.
take care of you. But yeah, I mean, there are discounts and stuff through the OKG. We recently had a class to do with knife design, to include what materials to choose, why to choose them. We have a class coming up where you'll go in and make a knife sheath
Nice.
at Leather Traditions or Traditions Leathercraft here in Oklahoma City. For a very nominal fee, you go in and you'll be walked through the entire process of building a sheath so that when you go home, you know exactly what to do.
Awesome. So, if you follow Sean and I and everything else, you tend to see every now and then what's with everybody just tagging you in the weird food stuff, the bizarre foods, because you know what? Sean will eat it. I mean, if it's peanut butter, jelly, pickled pig's feet sandwich, he's all over it.
Life is too short to pass up at least trying something new.
So,
That kind of goes back to the wandering bladesmith. In the especially in today's day and age, it's very easy to not like someone that you've never met. I don't like the people from this place or that place, or if they're a part of this political party or that political party or this religion, that religion. If you go sit down with someone and have a drink, have a cup of coffee, share a meal, break bread, it is so much more difficult not to like them.
yes.
And so there are some really strange foods in this world. And most people, when they hear about them, instantly turn their nose up. Nope, not trying it. With very few exceptions, I will try just about anything.
Especially fighting over the pig head at the castle during Texas Select. I
Hey,
have yet never to, I mean, you guys haul grab that head and you're gone. By the time I get in there, that thing is picked clean. It's like at least I want
yes.
the tongue, but
No,
no.
the crispy ears, the cheek meat, that's the best meat on the pig, man.
Oh yes,
So
definitely. Everybody's like,
that.
oh my. So what is the weirdest bizarre food that you've eaten so far? I
Wow.
mean, it just stands out like everybody's like, oh my God.
That's such a subjective question, though,
That's
because
what she said.
what most people think of as weird, somebody in another culture thinks of as their everyday food.
True.
And I've taught survival classes to youth groups and things like that. So we've had everything from snake, lizard, insects, all kinds of fish parts that most people would probably regurgitate at the thought of. But prepared properly, it's just food.
Yes.
You know, it and when you look at parts of the world, actually today I shared some tips on how to eat grasshoppers with someone.
And funny story about that. I'll hurry and get that. When I was a little kid, I was probably about 4 or 5. I caught this great big grasshopper. I mean, this thing was 4 or 5 inches long. It was one of those great big locust ones. And I just showed my friends. I said, my dad will eat this. No, they won't. No, they won't. So we go hauling butt towards the shop. And about that time, my dad comes walking out and, hey, they don't believe me, you'll eat this. So he sits down on the wall right there and takes it and looks at it and bites everything but the head off, throw the head off, munch away, gets up, walk away. And of course, my friends go boom. So we're in the last 10 minutes here, Sean. So
Okay.
I hope to maybe get a little extra coin to be able to do at least a bit longer here in the future. But pass on some little bit of words of wisdom from either eating weird food, traveling. The hat, etc.
I'll tell a quick story about the hat, then I'll get into some of the other stuff. I have a canvas hat that I wear that's made by a company called Real Deal Brazil. It's made from canvas that was used to cover semi-truckloads that are carried across the Amazon. And I've worn this hat for 20 plus years. I've worn it hiking up 14ers in Colorado. I've whitewater rafted. I go swimming in it. I've worn it to Europe. Everywhere I go, this is the hat I wear. When I did Forged in Fire, the camera crew that was here at the house talked me into wearing a tuxedo to the finale,
I
which
remember that.
you know me well enough to know that a tuxedo is not my daily wear.
No.
If you could see me right now, I'm in a pair of worn out overalls. And so I wore the tuxedo with my hat.
Sharp
And
dressed man. Ba-da-da-da-da.
well, I caught a little bit of crap from the judges about it. And one of the things I remember was Will Willis at the end of the show, after it was over, he said, mentioned something about my hat. And he said, "You know, I like that. I might have to take that from you." Well, for those who have not met Will, he's a big old boy.
He's big boy. And when he's
He's
talking
stout
normal,
for
he does
hell.
not sound like what he says on the show.
No, he's stout for hell, and he's been there. And I looked at him and I said, "You know, Will," I said, "you're a big old boy." I said, "And if you want to take this hat, you can probably do it." I said, "But by God, you're gonna know you're in a fight if you do." And he laughed, and that was kind of the end of it. But I've worn the hat all over, and the company's actually used my pictures on their website or their social media a few times. But it's
Nice.
just a very comfortable hat. They make a lot of different kinds, but that's the one that works for me. So,
Awesome.
as
Words of
far as
wisdom.
words of wisdom, nuggets of wisdom, don't wait till next week or next year. I used to ride motorcycles all over the country. I've ridden about 900,000 miles. And one of the things I heard more often than anything was, "One of these days," or "I always wanted to," or "I wish I could." Tomorrow's not promised. It's not guaranteed. And you're in the best shape of your life today. You're in the best position to travel today, not tomorrow, not next week, not next year. You don't have to travel on a millionaire's budget. I travel on a shoestring budget. I look for deals. I save my pennies. And I've worked my butt off. And I have people, I had a guy come in the shop a couple years ago, and he didn't mean it this way. I took offense at what he said about it. It must be nice to have all this. And it stopped me in my tracks. And I said, "You know, I worked my ass off for all this stuff. But I've worked my butt off so that I can go on these trips, so that
Yes.
I can go meet these people, so that I can have these fun experiences. When I die, none of the stuff I have is going to go in the coffin with me. All I have are the experiences I'm getting to do." For new makers, jump in, man. Go find somebody to take a class with. Go find a shop tour or a hammer in. Go talk to people. YouTube's a great tool, but everyone with a cell phone can make a YouTube channel and you don't know who to pick.
True.
Go find a reputable maker. Spend $100 or $200 or $500 one time, and you'll jump ahead so far in your making that it's ridiculous.
And I've had several students that's come and took my class. Some of them took just a little blacksmith knife. A year later, showed up with a half a dozen knives with him and his boy. Hey, what do you think of that? And I'm like, well done. I was
Exactly.
impressed.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
I was like, "You got bit, didn't you?" I says, "Yeah." "How much you spent?" "I don't want to talk about it." "How much more are you going to spend?" "I'm not going to talk about it." So, I mean,
you don't
Sam,
have to buy everything all at once.
no, you don't. I mean, Sam, so far, he's into about 10 grand over the last 4 years. So he got bit pretty hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just when you talk about the jumping into it and everything else, I've been kicking the can about doing this podcast idea for the last couple of years, and I finally decided that, like, you know what, like you said, quit kicking the can, just jump in and do it. So here we are. We're starting off small. We're putting this on, it's available on all the platforms of podcast plus YouTube. When I left the Oklahoma show that year, I was struggling pretty hard. Things, you know, the economy was hitting sales. I didn't sell anything there, and I was feeling pretty blue about myself on that. And shut this egg timer off so nobody hears that. I was leaving when I left town, heading north, heading home. A song called by Blue Beartooth came on called "I Was Alive." And I listened to the interview before that. And the story was about his grandfather and everything on his deathbed and everything. He asked his grandfather more, and I'm paraphrasing here. So if I don't get this right, I apologize, folks. You can hang me later by my big toe. Basically, his father, he asked his grandfather, did he have any regrets of, life? And his grandfather said, no, I didn't. I don't have any regrets. I didn't just live. I was alive. I went, like you're saying, out there. And think that fits into what we're talking about. And I listened to that song, and it played a few, and I played a few more times off my phone on the car there. And I got thinking, yeah, I didn't make any sales, but hey, I got to go out there and experience. I got to go out there and see my family. You're a brother from another mother of the blade and everything else. The camaraderie of, after the show and everything else, even though the stress of finance, I can look back 20, 30, 40 years from now and go, I didn't
I
just
was
live,
there.
I was alive, and I was there with my
So
family.
I know we're at the end of the time. I'll keep this really, really brief. But in regards to shows, I was at a show one time and I had that same feeling that you had about I didn't sell anything. What am I doing? Am I any good at this? Should I even be here? And someone pulled me aside and they said, I want you to, where are we at? And I said, well, we're, and at that time it was Blade Show. And they said, say it again, Blade Show. They said, it's Blade what? Blade Show. They said, okay, it's called Blade Show, not Blade Sale.
True.
Okay. You go to show what you make. You go to, and I jokingly say, to kiss babies or to kiss hands and shake babies. You go there to meet people. And I've had people come to shows and it's like they it's very, very, very common to leave those shows disgruntled or frustrated over sales. And I ask them, how many business cards did you give out? How many makers did you meet? How many business cards are you taking home with you? Well, I don't have business cards, or I don't have a sign, or it's like, how are people supposed to find you then? Texas Blade Show, I think there were about 800 makers last year. I talked to a maker and he said, only sold three knives. I said, what do you mean you only sold three knives?
You sold
I
three
said,
knives, bud.
there's 800 makers in this building. If they only brought 10 knives apiece, and we all know that's not true,
No,
that's
not, and
8,000.
especially me.
Well, that's 8,000 knives. And out of 8,000 knives, they chose three of yours.
Yes.
So don't get so frustrated and tied up in the sales. Shows are an incredible place to leave inspired by other makers. I
One
look at
minute.
your work and other people's work, and I go home and it's like, man, I can't wait to get back in the shop. You buy materials and the inspiration of people is amazing.
Yes. We're coming down on the time here, Sean. I want to thank you for your time tonight. I hope we can do a number two episode, continue more of this talk. We got about a minute here. So I'm gonna wrap everything up. Next show is you'll find everything on OklahomaKnifeMakerGroups.com.
OklahomaKnifeGroup.com, yes.
And everything else. I hope to maybe be out there. If not, showing. If not, we might, if it's in the budget. Just come hang out. We
Come
got
visit,
gaming.
man.
So, thanks for joining another awesome episode of Behind the Anvil with your host, me. Thank you, Sean. And we're going to get out of here. Catch us next time and see you then. Stay sharp, America.